Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good today.
Awesome. I'm glad you're here. And Dave Hamilton, I hope you're well.
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. And
sweet.
Yeah, and thanks for being here. All right, well, let's just hop into it, and let's talk about this earnings report from yesterday. So yesterday, Apple did their second fiscal quarter for 2018 earnings conference call and report, and the quick rundown of the numbers is $61.1 billion in earnings, and let's see. So earnings were up 30% year over year. No, wait. 30%. So, yeah. Okay. So sometimes keeping track of the numbers just gets convoluted. So revenue was up 16% year over year. Earnings were up 30% year over year. This made for a record March quarter. And let's see. So then we have iPhone and Mac sales. So Mac sales were just over 4 million units, which was down just a little bit year over year. iPads were up a little bit, 9.1 million units, as opposed to 8.9 million for the same quarter last year. And 52.2 million iPhones, which is up from 50.76 million iPhones. And I have to point out that analysts were kind of freaking out before the earnings report because they thought that iPhone sales were going to be pretty soft. But 52.2 million in the March quarter, that seems pretty good.
Well, I mean, and digging, kind of pulling on that thread a little bit, the majority of the iPhones that were sold are iPhone 10s.
Yes. And this is even with analysts saying, oh, iPhone sales or iPhone 10 sales are really bad. Apple must be cutting back on production. And yet Apple says that was their best selling phone still.
Right. Right. Yeah. Customers, Cook says customers chose iPhone 10 more than any other iPhone each week in the March quarter, just as they did following its launch in the December quarter. We also grew revenue in all of our geographic segments, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, I find that really interesting. And what's even more interesting, although supporting of the fact, is looking, you know, Jason Snell over at sixcolors.com always does such a stellar job with all of his charts. Yes. And one of the charts that I found very interesting is the average iPhone selling price chart. And simply looking at it in relation to the time frame during which the iPhone 10 was released, you know, you see this iPhone chart and, you know, going back a couple of years, 2014, it's like, you know, $650. It dipped in Q3 of 2014, presumably with the iPhone SE coming out and all of that, it dipped, you know, down into the 500s, then back up and, you know, sitting kind of in the the low sevens. And then last quarter of you know, 2017 and this quarter now, spiked up to what, 820, and now is still, you know, I think right about 800 or something like that. So really interesting. The only way that happens is with the iPhone 10 costing $1,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. Or more.
Yep. Yes. Or more.
Yeah. So that's a pretty solid indicator that iPhone 10 is selling well, because that's pushing that number up.
Yep. Yep. It's really interesting. I really wish. I love my iPhone 10, by the way. I'll stand on my soapbox for 10 more seconds.
Okay.
I wish that there was a way that they could put a Touch ID sensor either on the side or the back so that I didn't have to rely on Face ID, because it's slow and most of the time is very distracting to have to use. So there you go.
You know, I'm going to hop up on your soapbox with you for a moment.
There's room.
I'm glad. Although we're close, I don't mind having to squeeze in. But the Face ID thing, while I find it incredibly convenient, there are times when it's incredibly not. And an example is, like, let's say that I'm in my car, I pull up to a stoplight, and I need to look at the phone real quick.
Yep.
With Touch ID, I can already have the phone unlocked before my eyes are even over at the phone. But with Face ID, I have to stop what I'm doing, reposition myself so that my face is in the right place for the camera, and then I wait for it to unlock, and then I can do whatever I need to do. And that just doesn't feel safe to me.
So here in New Hampshire, we can't, by law, interact with our phones more than pushing one button, even at a stoplight. So anytime I would do something like that, I'm already breaking the law. But if I say, you know, if I say, hey, S-Lady, open Waze, it tells me you have to unlock your iPhone first. And I can't just float my finger over the Touch ID sensor to do that. Yeah. I either have to, like, focus my attention on the phone or try and type my, you know, multi-digit passcode to get into the phone. And the same thing happens, oddly enough, when I say to call, like, my daughter or my wife, I tell them to call them on their mobile phone, Siri just dials it. When I say to call my son, I think because I have a SIM card number from him when we traveled to Europe a couple years ago in there, which I just need to remove, but I don't think about it because I only do this when I'm driving. When I say call my son's mobile phone, it says you have to unlock your iPhone first and then forces me to pick from one of those two numbers.
Yeah.
So it like in that scenario, it's like, okay, this completely kills any benefit for Face ID for me. Just get rid of it. Give me the thing. But that's not to say I really like my iPhone 10 and I grok why the numbers are the way they are for sales.
I am totally with you. And most of the time, even though Face ID is a little bit slower, I like it because I open an app and it just unlocks.
Yeah. But for like purchasing apps and things like that, Touch ID is still much smoother interaction than totally. Face ID with the, yeah, yeah. So it's clunky and, you know, so let's see where it is in, you know, 18 months or, you know, 32 months or something like that. So,
yeah. And I'm thinking that since we are the beta testers for this.
Correct.
Realistically.
Yeah. No, we have to accept that. That's right.
When the next iPhone comes out, it's going to be better. And my guess is that will help improve or increase iPhone sales even more.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. And I saw a number somewhere online that I can't remember where it was. Apple, the money that they made in this last quarter is more than what Microsoft makes in a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Microsoft is not hurting for business.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I also noticed again, I'm just a visual guy when it comes to this stuff. So looking, I really like Jason's numbers, charts rather. The services business, well, the Mac business accounts for 10% of Apple's Q2 2018 revenue by category, right? Mm-hmm. The iPhone's at 62, just in case anybody is driving along and wants to know that what the biggest one is. The Mac's at 10, services is at 15.
Right.
50% larger than the Mac in terms of from a revenue standpoint.
That's services by itself qualifies as a Fortune 300 company.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah. Yeah, just by itself.
Yes, just by itself. So, Andrew, you haven't been with us long enough to follow the numbers and the trends through the earnings reports quarter after quarter. So I'm curious, mm-hmm. Do you have any questions about the earnings report? What any of the numbers mean? Just you're like the everyman for me right now.
I am. Well, I mostly just wish that Apple would break down their services category because I'd be interested to see how much Apple News is making, how much Apple Pay is making, And I know they said that their wearables business is pretty huge. They also have that other category, right, where they group things like the watch and the HomePod together. So I'd like to see that broken down.
You are not alone. There are a lot of people that would love to see those specific numbers. And my guess is that no matter how much we beg, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So
we will hear them when there is a good spin that can be delivered with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm thinking if Apple wanted to tell us Apple Watch numbers, it would be a pretty good spin anyhow. Because Apple Watch seems to be selling really well, just based on the metrics that other companies are coming up with. So I think they could probably be proud of those numbers.
So another question I had is, what does this buyback program mean?
Oh, that's an awesome question. Okay, so Apple's buyback program is it's a program where they are repurchasing their public stock that's already been out in circulation. So what happens when Apple buys back this stock is it essentially gets decommissioned. It is not going to be resold. It is out of circulation. And so that means there's less stock available for other people to buy. And that's not a bad thing, because it gives Apple more control over the company as a whole and finances. And for investors, this can be a good thing, because there's less stock in a company that's already incredibly valuable. And that has a tendency to drive the stock value up for what's still remaining. So, Dave, did that sound reasonable for an explanation?
Yeah. Yeah. I checked the box. That was perfect.
All right. So Andrew, more questions? I'm totally so putting you on the spot. I know.
No, that's okay. This is related to the buyback program. I'm just wondering, aren't employees paid with shares? So I wonder if they would get a bonus or something like that.
So employees, they get stock options. Not all employees. There are certain classes that do and certain classes that don't, and from what I understand. And so they have to hold on to the stock for a certain amount of time for it to become fully vested. And then once that's happened, they now have the option. They can continue to just hold it and collect dividends like any other shareholder can, or they can sell it and take whatever money they've gotten from that and do as they please. So for employees that have held onto their stock for a long time, it's probably pretty valuable for them now. And if an employee got stock, and I believe this is how it works. So if I'm wrong, I know someone will correct me. If an employee has stock that was fully vested at the time that a split happened, their stock splits. So,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So they got the same benefits from stock splitting as any other investor would.
Yeah. Anybody holding the stock. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Or I believe that's right. And if we're both wrong, then somebody will tell us.
Yes, they will. The great thing is we have really intelligent listeners, and listeners are always happy to chime in. And I love that. So
observations at MacObserver.com.
That's right. Or at TMO Daily on Twitter. Yep.
I have actually seen the opposite argument of that. I was actually just reading this morning about how some people are saying that instead of giving the money back to the shareholders, Apple should, you know, reinvest it in R&D and acquisition, stuff like that.
Well, they would have to change what they're doing. Well, of course they'd have to change what they're doing because it would be different from what they're doing now. What I was trying to say is they would have to plan for that ahead of time. And I believe that involves regulatory filings and stuff that there's procedures that go along with that. So sure, they could take that money and dump it back into R&D, but giving the dividends to their shareholders, there are a lot of other financial benefits that Apple gets from doing that.
Okay.
So my guess is that Apple has looked at everything and said, you know, we've got all this money and the best use of it right now is to disperse this part of it back to our shareholders. And we still have enough money to do whatever we want with R&D and all of that. So sure, I could totally see Apple investing more in research and development. And I know there's a lot of people out there that think they really need to, but my guess is Apple's looking at what they're doing and they're thinking, yep, we're spending the right amount. All right. Do you have more questions?
I think that's it for now.
Okay, cool. Dave, did we hit the important stuff for the earnings report?
From my standpoint, I think we did. Yeah.
All right. Well, then, Andrew, I'm going to put you back on the spot again, but this time you're going to be the one dumping information instead of asking for it. So, So yesterday you answered a question that a lot of people have had, which is Safari the only web browser I can use on my iPhone or iPad? And the answer to that is no. There are other options, and you have found some. So tell me about this.
Yeah. So, I mean, first, like I mentioned the article, Apple kind of forces other browsers to use the same rendering engine that they do, right? WebKit.
Mm-hmm.
So there probably isn't really a whole difference when it comes to speed, but these other browsers have other features. So, for example, DuckDuckGo came out with a privacy-focused browser, and when you use that, they force websites to use HTTPS. They block tracking. DuckDuckGo by itself lets you search privately anyway, and they give each website a privacy grade, which I think is pretty interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
So they grade websites based on the amount of ads or analytics they use to track people. And you can also, there's this thing called a fire button. So once you're done browsing, you just tap this button and it clears away all your tabs and your data. So I thought that was cool.
That's really cool. So you can torch your web browser activity with a single button.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. All right. So we have a couple minutes left. Tell me about another one of the browsers that you liked. And listeners, I'll make sure there's a link to Andrew's article in the show notes so you can check out all the browsers that he found.
So another browser, I've only used it a little bit, basically when I was writing this, but it was making the rounds in the news a couple months ago, and it's called Cake Browser.
Okay.
So it was specifically built for mobile, and they claim it's much faster to search the web. You can search multiple services at once. So when you search for something, you'll get videos, images, news, shopping, all these different categories. Plus, like pretty much all these other browsers, it blocks ads. There's a privacy mode. You can save websites. And there's a news section, too. They call it slices.
So of course, because cake.
Yeah. So to me, that seems like it's taking on Safari's reading list, I think.
All right, that's cool. Huh.
Yeah.
So we're out of time, but I'm going to put both of you on the spot with the browser question. Are either of you using something other than mobile Safari regularly on your iPhones or iPads?
I use Firefox, not as my main browser, but I use it pretty regularly. It's handy if I need to be logged into an alternate account. Like on my Mac, I generally just use private browsing in something like Safari to, if I need to log into like an alternate Google account to have as like my primary or something like that. I just use private browsing. It inherits nothing and I can log in. But re-logging in on iOS, especially with two-factor authentication for something like Google, is cumbersome. So it's much more convenient for me if I can just push a button that already has me logged in, and with that is Firefox. Although, as I'm saying this, I realize I could be using the built-in browser, which is really Safari, in 1Password to accomplish this same thing, because it will take care of those logins for me. One thing that probably should be said is that all of these are using WebKit, right? Is that's mm-hmm. still correct, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's
yeah. So it's still they're all rendering based on the Safari engine, which is called WebKit. It's just a different wrapper and features and look and things like that. So, and a different engine and a different set of cookies and all that stuff too.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So Andrew, how about you?
I use Safari. Mostly because Apple doesn't let people, change the default browser on iOS. I mean, I personally don't think there's anything wrong with Safari, but if I could set a default browser, I might be using something else.
And I'm using mobile Safari pretty much all the time, although just recently I started playing around a little bit with Aloha, which I think is more similar to the DuckDuckGo browser as far as features go than it is to the to the other browsers. But since mobile Safari is already there, that's actually my primary browser.
Yeah.
All right, so we are out of time. Dave, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
Yep, yes indeed. Andrew, thank you for being here as well.
Yep, thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you on the show. And listeners, I'm so glad you were here. Thank you for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.